And so I just made a couple of small calls, and he raised his old neck up about 3 foot into the air, it seemed like.
Well, when they weigh 37 pounds, they got 3 feet of neck.
But anyway, and he kind of, and then he went into a strut right there. And I thought, boy, that's kind of unusual. And anyway, then he started kind of working towards me just a little bit, but was really taking his time. And I got my gun up out the window of my blind, and I got into position to where I wouldn't have to move an inch for him, because I always try to do that way out, because sure. I've had times whenever just the least little Camel move, and boy, they'll pick up on that. I caught a movement out of the corner of my eye. Walking
in the early dawn to climb. Wise Eye Technology presents American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. I'm Redbone Mike Crace. I got Wayne Locke with me in the studio, and Alex Rutledge is on the line. Alex, where are you right now?
I am standing by an old barn that was probably built in the 1950s. Wouldn't you say, David?
Probably 1950s.
Yeah,
early or late 40s,
and we're overlooking a beautiful pasture with timber lines in central Kentucky. We're over here filming a hunt or hunts with my good friend David Gordon. I've known him for many years. We started hunting with him back in the HS days, and we're over here filming some hunts. And we're taking a four-year-old boy this coming Friday. They're flying in from Kansas, and we're trying to help this little boy accomplish his slam. He's killed an Osceola, a Merriam, and a Rio. Now he just needs his Eastern. And we're going to try to help him fulfill that here in Kentucky with David Gordon.
You said 4 years old?
4 years old. He will be the youngest person to walk this earth to fulfill the slam at 4 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right, everybody. 0-4.
That is pretty amazing.
It sure is. But I want to thank Ron Support for coming on the show. And Ron Support, I've known Ron for many years. Ron used to manage the Walmart store in Mountain View, Missouri. And I remember when they first built the store there, Ron would put on 3D archery shoots, and people would come from everywhere. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alex. Good to be here.
And we're Now, you're 77 years young.
Yep, 77, yep. And feel like I'm about 57, maybe. I don't know. Maybe 47. I feel good. Praise the Lord.
Well, what we want to do, Ron, you've accomplished something here recently that many people hasn't, and it intrigued me to want to have you on the show, because the topic is about turkey hunting. And everybody that's listening across the country and across the world, Mr. Ron Support just accomplished another amazing feet and turkey hunting. He just harvested a gobbler. And Ron, I'm gonna let you tell him, how much did the gobbler weigh?
Weighed 37 pounds.
37 pound Eastern turkey. How long was the beard, Ron?
It was 12 inch. A good strong 12 inch beard. Yep.
And the spurs on that turkey, how long was that?
Inch and 3/4.
Wow.
Inch and 3. That bird had to be a grandpa instead of a hook daddy. He's a hook
right.
Grandpa.
My wife said that he was probably kin to Big Bird, you know, on Sesame Street.
Alex, I asked Ron when he came in to the studio today, I asked him if he had rocks in his pockets when they weighed that bird. My goodness, that's a big turkey.
It's the biggest I've heard of as an Eastern. It could be a possible world record, possibly.
I would think so. I mean, you know, people kill 25-pound birds in Missouri, and everybody goes, wow, that's a big bird. This one's 12 pounds bigger.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I killed a 21-pound turkey. Excuse me. I killed a 21-pound turkey earlier last week, and I saved the legs, of course, and the spurs and the legs and the beard and all. But those legs alone, Alex, it was almost like a human hand. Those legs are so big, and they were up in the joint part of the leg from the claw up to the first elbow was at least twice as big as that 21-pound bird. I mean, it's just huge. The whole thing's huge.
Pterodactyl.
A pteraturkey.
You called an agent and had the agents come and look at the turkey, a Missouri Department of Conservation agent.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
He said in 22 years he'd never seen anything like it.
22 years. Yeah, I tell you, I knew that we had some big turkeys, but 37 pounds, that's mind-blowing. What I want to do, we want to talk about your hunt later on the show. What I want to do is talk about your American roots, Ron, so people can understand and know who you are. Where was Ron Support born?
I was born and raised right here in Shannon County. Went to school at Montier School, which is right there between Mountain View and Birch Tree, and had 8 grades in one room. Mr. Shockley, you remember Mr. Shockley, Alex?
Oh, Wilbur, Mr. Yeah. Shockley, yeah. Yes, sir.
Him and his wife both were the teachers there, and Mr. Shockley drove the bus, and she was the teacher up until the 8th grade. And then I went on to Mountain View to school, and then was able to attend some of the classes at the University of Arkansas later on.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, did you play sports in high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a really good football team. We beat West Plains, and that always was a thing that if you were from Mountain View and you played West Plains in football, if you could beat West Plains, you didn't care if you won another game all year.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, if you can beat West Plains, it doesn't matter. The rest of them are nothing.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's pretty good, and pretty rare feat, too.
Oh, it was very definitely rare. But we had a good team. Really didn't have anybody that was particular stars in the team, just a good bunch of boys that played together, and I go to church with about 5 or 6 of those guys that was on that team when we beat West Plains, and so we have to go over it ever so often. We beat West Plains, 26-6, and I played basketball and played track and run track done pretty good. Took 5th at state in the low hurdles in track, and so. You know, I just I've enjoyed sports. I feel like that sports is a way that people learn that you need each other. You're able to, pretty much get along with each other and realize that you need each other in the huddle for sure.
Yeah, well, Ron, I tell you, I've known you many years, and now that we know where you was born and raised and where you went to school and what sports you played. I guess my next question before we go to a break here, we've probably got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Where did you go to work as soon as you got out of college? Let's talk about that.
Well, I was working in Springfield, and then this guy approached me and wanted me to go to work for Walmart. And at that time, Walmart wasn't very big. There wasn't very many stores. But anyway, I ended up going and visiting with the guy from Walmart and went to work for Walmart. And from there went on and opened new stores in California and Nevada and Arizona and ended up becoming a district manager, which was basically over about 3 states there. And just had a tremendous career. The Lord bless me. I was telling Wayne coming over here, I just treated people out there like I had been taught how to treat people here in the Ozarks, and that is as real people and appreciate who they are and what they are, and it worked out there for those people.
Well, you're a great example of an Ozarkian for sure, Ron. And everybody, if you're just tuned in, you're listening to Mr. Ron Support, the man that's killed 2 gobblers over 30 pounds in his lifetime. He's 77 years young. We're going to do a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Mr. Support about turkey hunting and his life. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more American Roots Outdoors right after this.
Hey, this is Eddie Salter, and you listen to American Roots and Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Wishing on some luck. I've been on a big boy for a while, like loading in the back of my truck.
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5 megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should too. Make your hunt easier. Use WiseEye.
WiseEye Technology presents American Roots with Alex Rutledge and friends. This is Wayne Locke. I got Mike Creese in the studio. Alex is on the phone with us, and we have Ron in studio with us. Ron, you were just talking about working at Walmart and how you just got started. Walmart wasn't obviously what it was today. Now, I have a question. When you first started working there, did you ever say to yourself, man, this could really be something big one day?
No. At that time, Kmart and then TGNY were big companies, and mm-hmm. Kmart was just unreal. I mean, they were all over the United States, and I never thought that we would ever surpass Kmart in business or whatever. But Mr. Sam, I was able to really be with him quite a little bit and visit with him, and his mentality was just not worry about how many stores or how much money, just try to take care of people in a way that they appreciated where they would come back. And he would always say, you know, exceed the customer's expectation. And that's what we tried to do. And at that time, he basically was just all about taking care of that customer.
That's a motto everybody should be using.
It should be. And a lot of people have adopted that. But I've had the opportunity to meet Sam Walton, or had the opportunity twice, mm-hmm. at different mm-hmm. store openings where we were doing live broadcasts.
Yeah.
And the thing that struck me, and there was a trick to it, but everybody he saw, everybody he was instructed to meet with at that store, he called them by name.
Yeah.
I thought about it later. I thought, how in the world did he remember all those people's names? Yeah. He made us wear name tags.
Yeah.
If you were part of the people that were going to be meeting Sam Walton, you were given a sticker with your name on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just your first name.
Yeah.
And he would walk up and he'd say, hey, Mike, glad to see you. I'm Sam Walton.
Yeah.
But he called everybody by name, and he thought that was very important.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is. I think one of the things that I used to tell my people was to exceed the customer's expectation is basically remembering their name.
Exactly.
And also asking them if they're finding everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
Customers make a decision every day to keep you in business or to not keep you in business. And why you walk by one door and go to the next door is basically you remember the guy that took care of you the last time. And that's what keeps bringing people back.
Yeah.
And it worked. And I think the thing that I enjoyed the most about Walmart was I was put in a position to where basically I seen young men and young ladies that I felt like were capable of more than they were doing. And consequently, I was in a position to be able to empower them and then promote them to, and some of them ended up running stores and everything. And they thought, you know, they'd be just a stalker the rest of their life. But I had seen something in them, and I praise the Lord for that.
How many years were you working there before you realized to yourself, boy, I made the best decision in my life?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just something that you slowly grow into. And as far as exactly when that happened, I think, like we were saying, to meet Sam and to get an understanding of what he was and who he was all about, I just bought into it like you would buy into a coach in mm-hmm. sports.
And
you know,
want to please that
guy. I wanted to please him.
Exactly.
I wanted to please him, and I wanted to be successful for Sam Walton.
It kind of reminds me of like the New England Patriots with Bill Belichick. They always say no matter where you were drafted or whatever, if you bought into what he was selling, you were going to be successful. And look at, I mean, six Super Bowls later, you know.
And any team.
Right.
Any team. It's so interesting how so many things go back to, in the first segment, Ron, you mentioned it, about being on a team in high school the importance of learning, of being a teammate, being dependable. Letting that guy next to you know that you've got his back and he's got yours.
Yep.
And people that do that, they tend to be more successful in life.
Mm-hmm. You bet. You bet. Realize there's a lot more to it than just you.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Takes all those pieces to make that team.
That's right.
And same way at a Walmart store, it takes all those people to make that store run efficiently.
Yep.
What a successful story, Ron. And you're an inspiration to many listeners here on the show. And as we've talked about your career and the Walmart, let's get into the hunting aspect of Ron Seforek. How was you when you heard your first wild turkey?
Oh, let's see. I would have been about, see, the season didn't open till 1960. And in about somewhere in the 58 and 59, along through there, I was hearing turkeys gobble, and I realized that that it would be a challenge, you know. And so basically, in 1961, I hunted my first turkey, and unfortunately didn't kill one for a couple of years there. But then in, I think in like 63 or 64, I killed a gobbler, a small gobbler. I never will forget. I was calling him, and he was answering me, and he was close enough that I had to sit down in an old logging road, and I just squatted down right there. And I was shooting an old double-barrel L.C. Smith, and had two triggers, and had 12-gauge. And that turkey, he was coming, and he done a triple gobble, and I realized that, okay, I got to just sit down right here. And so as he appeared, I pulled up before he appeared, and I pulled up, and when he come, I shot, and it knocked me backwards, plumb off my feet, down, and I was laying on my back, and I raised up enough to see that he was laying down too, but I realized I'd pulled both triggers on that 12-gauge.
Maybe that's why you ended up getting rotator cuff surgery years later.
Oh, me, I tell you what, I was bleeding out of my mouth, you know, where it kicked, it broke my teeth. Cut into my lips there. So me and the turkey both were bleeding. And Wayne and I were talking about it. It's the only sport there is around here to where you can call and they answer you, and you can be suggestive, and hopefully they'll like you and come in and say, I want some of you. And the other animal would be the elk, which, you know, of course, we've got a few now, and they're opening the Season Peck Ranch now. But it's a great sport. It's a great sport.
It is. Now, let me ask you, Ron, who introduced you to turkey hunting? Was it your dad, your grandpa? How did you get intrigued to get into turkey hunting?
My dad, we were big quail hunters, and I'd quail hunted ever since I was big enough to carry a little old 410 single barrel Stevens. And so we'd quail hunted all of our lives and always had bird dogs and everything. And Dad said, you know, that turkey hunting might be fun. And so I went with him the first time or two. And he kind of brought me into it. And then my brother Gary, you may remember Gary. We lost him a few years ago. He had cancer of the liver. But anyway, Gary and I, we hunted quite a little bit together. And that one in 67 that I shot, Gary and I were kind of teaming that one up. He was calling, and I was waiting for the gobbler to come around the corner there, and we killed a 31-pounder then.
31
wow,
pounds.
You know, wow. I was looking at the photo of you and Gary. That photo you sent me, and boy, your grandson looks just like
him. Gary and Shallon are just, I mean, they're identical almost. Yeah,
that's American roots being passed on right there. And
Shallon, he loves to hunt. Jazz too, my granddaughter, they both are good hunters, and they turkey hunt and deer hunt with me, and also pheasant hunt with me too. They just enjoy that pheasant hunting.
Yeah, well, that's good that you're passing on your love of outdoors to your grandkids. It's so important to the outdoor industry. It's so important to pass on anything that's our heritage to our kids. And that being said, I know Mike Crazy's probably got something to say about heritage.
I do have something to say about heritage, and we'll say it after we take a break. Folks, you're listening to American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad Harris. You're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Up a big old hill, year after year, got my hunting gear.
WiseEye Technology presents American Roots Outdoors. This is our fourth segment of American Roots Outdoors. Again, if you're just joining us, we have Mr. Ron Seforek, 77 years young. That's harvested two gobblers over 30 pounds. I've not shot one over 26 pounds. What an accomplishment, and what a great story. And we're learning a lot of things about Mr. Sporek. And what you're going to learn throughout this is a lot about him and his love of the outdoors and his family and America and his faith. And also his secret to closing the deal on two of these 30-pound gobblers on the bonus segment. But we're going to talk about some of his techniques and how he finds gobblers and what he does to keep gobblers in areas he hunts. So, Ron, what is the secret to keeping gobblers in areas that you hunt?
Well, basically what we try to do is we try to create a food plot that is attractive to the gobblers as well as deer also. In many cases, that seems to keep them in the area and keep them there coming to that as a normal place for them for food. Also, we've tried to limit any activity that would be disrupting their normal day activity throughout the year. I have a piece of property that basically it's a 40-acre piece of property that joins the National Scenic Rivers Way, and basically it's done. We do nothing there except just promote the hunting of the turkey or the deer, and basically with the food plots and so on.
Do you plant a lot of clover in your food plots?
Yes, got clover. We sure do. And then there's it. We've tried some different things, and we're some of the cases where they basically with the corn. I've got some corn out there, and there's years that the corn does just pretty darn good.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's legal to plant corn for wildlife. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alex, I think this is a great story to tell people that have the resources, that if you can set aside part of your farm, if you love to hunt, if you can set aside, and I would say even if you could do just 5 or 10 acres.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't have to be 40, but even 5 or 10, mm-hmm. and just mark that strictly for wildlife. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, people out there could improve their hunting success in whatever it is they wanted to hunt. Right. I bet you the squirrel hunting on that 40 acres is absolutely unbelievable
as well.
It is. And probably a lot of those big old fat red squirrels if you're growing corn out there.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, guys, if I may interrupt you, we're standing here. There's four of us at this old barn. And Jake has just walked out in the field in front of us from right to left, about 350, 400 yards. This is pretty cool. We're doing our show, but I just had to share that with you. But Ron, what great advice, and thank you for sharing with our listeners what one of your secrets is to keeping the wildlife on your property. And there's lots more and more people that's getting involved in the food plotting, and that's why we encourage people to buy Eagle Seed.
Yep.
They have all different kinds of blends of food plots.
Yep.
So, Ron, I have a question for you. You were talking about the food plots and the Eagle Seed, the clover and all that. Mm-hmm. What about watering holes? I think that's something that's underutilized and not talked about enough. Do you have some of those on your property too?
We dug a pond there, and it has good drainage into that pond, and so consequently there's always fresh water there on that pond. And so, yes, that's very important because, the food is one thing, but then the water is another situation. This time of year, of course, with the rains and everything, they get a lot of water just from, different areas in the woods and so on. On this property, there's probably about 15 to 20 acres that is clear, but the rest of it is wooded.
Okay.
And so we get a lot of white oak acorns, and all, and that's an awful good food source also.
Candy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm kind of interested in Ron. You've been hunting since the early 1960s, since they started turkey hunting and legalized it in Missouri. And I know we'll talk about this in the final segment of the radio show too, because I think it's a great interest. The tools for the turkey hunter and the evolution of the turkey calls, you've seen it all.
Yeah, sure have.
Now, in 1967, when you killed that first bird, mm-hmm. what kind of turkey calls were you using?
I used a Lynch cedar box. It was made in 1958, the Lynch box was. It's got the date right on the bottom. I still got the box and all.
Do you really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's a pretty sweet box. It sure is.
Wow. Well, now, did you use it for a long time before you started graduating on to other calls and
yes.
Mouth calls? And
yes, exactly, the diaphragms and all that. And the slate. Now, slate's a good call because it's hard to goof a slate up, you know. I mean, a box call, if you make
it. Oh, you ought to see me trying to goof one.
Oh, but the slate's a good call also, and there's some good slates out there made. If the turkey's very far away, the box call to me is the best because it carries. It's carry. But then once a turkey gets within 100 yards, couple of hundred yards, I usually will either go to the slate or the diaphragm because you can make a real quiet call that will bring them on in. A real sharp, loud call sometimes will spook them.
Yeah.
It really will.
Yeah. Now, being a career Walmart guy, you have seen, I mean, in the sporting goods department, all the different kinds of turkey calls that have come through over the years. Yeah. Was there ever one that you saw and you thought, well, that'll never work? but you bought one anyway and took it out to find out?
That one that's the box where you push the peg and the spring, that's the one that I thought, good Lord, what would anybody want with that?
But they were somewhat successful.
Yeah, really. I mean, it didn't take a lot of skill to do it.
Right. As a matter of fact, I think I still got one back there in my office on the shelf. I never did take it home because I didn't want to take it in the woods, but I think it's still sitting back there on the shelf.
Yeah.
A lot of kids have success with those because it's easy. Oh, yeah. You know, they can't do the slate.
Easy to manipulate.
But you were talking about slates, and Alex, I mean, I know you'll agree 100%. I mean, our Margaret call, that seems to be a slam dunk for anybody that uses our Margaret call, slate call.
Well, Ron, I didn't know if you knew this or not. American Roots stands for faith, family, friends, and the outdoors, and our constitutional rights. And all of my calls have meaning. We named all of my calls from my sisters, which you knew.
Yeah,
from my sister,
Evelyn, exactly. Yeah,
slate call
and Margaret.
Margaret's slate. She's a 3-inch slate call. Margaret's a 4-inch. And my box calls named after my mother.
Yes.
And my glass calls are named after my grandma Opal Grandstaff and Linda's mother, Minnie, and my sister Maureen. So all of those passed and went on.
Yep.
And all of my calls have meaning. I would like to get some of my calls in your hands sometime.
You bet. I'd love that. I'd love that. I'd appreciate it. You bet. Sounds good. Yeah, your family is a good family. They really are. I remember your mom there in the nursing home was the same time my mom was in there. And we just they had a good relationship.
Yes, they did. My mom and dad thought a lot of your family, and they was good people as well. And I want to thank you, Ron, for being on the show, man. You're an inspiration to a lot of people, and I hope when I reach 77 years young that I'm still hunting turkeys, and I hope to kill one at least 30 pounds.
All right, Alex, I know you've got to go because y'all are, and we're recording this in the evening earlier in the week, and Alex is trying to roost some birds out there in Kentucky, so I know you've got to go. We'll continue with more with Ron here in just a moment. Folks, you're listening to American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, this is Michael Watting with Bone Collector, and you're listening to my buddy Alex Rutledge on American Roots Outdoors, man.
Around your heart, so you never gotta worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Hi, everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. How many of you need an attorney? If you're like me, sometimes you do. I go to Zane Prevett at the Prevett Law Office, Willow Springs, Missouri. No case is too big or too small. You can call Zane at 417-469-3535. Zane Prevett at the Prevett Law Office. This is Alex Rutledge, and he is my attorney.
Hornady presents
American Roots with Alex Rutledge and Friends. This is Wayne Locke. Got Mike Crace in the studio. Alex was with us, but the turkeys are starting to come in and going to roost. So he had to hang up with us because, well, we know where his priorities lie on these last 30 minutes of daylight where he's at. So
and again, folks, we recorded this earlier in the week, and Alex is in Kentucky where they've already laid down a couple of birds, and they're getting ready. Getting ready to lay down another one.
Right. He put one down this morning. And can't wait to hear that story next week when we talk about that. And he's got the four-year-old boy coming in Friday. And
I'm still amazed by that.
Four years old
and going for his slam run. Could you ever imagine that?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I got a four-year-old at home, and I can't imagine him even sit still. I can't get him to sit still long enough to eat dinner or drink his milk in the morning, let alone to sit there for a turkey to come in.
Yeah. I want to check that kid's birth certificate. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so we've been talking with Ron about his career in a Walmart employee for a long time and turkey hunter since they started turkey hunting back in 1960. And Ron, you do other types of hunting as well.
You bet. I really love the upland bird hunting because basically I have dogs and it's almost a partnership deal. The dogs, you take a lot of pride in them. They're just like one of your kids almost. And as you train them and as they work closer and so on, they come down and they hold on these birds. And then, of course, you flush them and then they go and retrieve that bird. And it's the proudest thing they ever could do is bring that bird to you, you know. And I just it's a good challenge. It really is. There's just, you know, a thrill in that pheasant, especially. They're such a beautiful bird. They're just unreal how beautiful they are, and that bird gets up with that cackle, and it's just a thrill. It's a thrill.
Yeah, I have an uncle, Lyndon Cash, who probably is listening this morning, and also like you, an upland bird hunter, quail hunter.
Yeah.
And he was always going to take me, but we never could make it happen. But he was the same way. He was passionate about it.
Oh, yeah.
And they, those guys would travel all over the country to hunt pheasant.
Yeah.
And I never got an opportunity to go, but man, what a great sport.
Oh, it is. It really is.
I've had coon hounds, so I know about the dog relationship.
Yes, exactly.
I know about the dog relationship.
Yep, yep. I was going to ask you, what kind of dogs do you have?
Brittany's.
Okay.
But now I've had German Shorthairs. Matter of fact, I just put a German Shorthair down that she just got so old that she just could not do it. She still wanted to, but out of the feeling for her, I put her down. But anyway, German Shorthair. Also, I've had English Pointers. That do a good English setters. I've had them. I've quail hunted ever since, like I say, when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And so I've had about all the different quail hunting dogs that you could have. The Brittany, they're a good dog, and I feel like that they're probably, as far as aggressiveness, they're the most aggressive. And they're pretty much close-range dogs. They don't range out too far. Now, some of your English Pointers and all, they get out their ways. But anyway, they're good.
Yeah, I had I used labs. Mike, we had talked when we were coming down here. Ron rode with me down here, and we were talking about the. He asked me if I'd ever been to the what was the name of the place?
Ozark Wings
over there.
Yeah, at a coal field.
Yeah, by West Plains there.
Yep. Yep.
And I said no, I never heard of it. And
Chet Ferguson's place.
Yeah, he told me about it, and my ears perked right up. And I had labs, and when I was with the Valley View Hunt Club. We used to go over in Geauga. There was a place out there a farm that had the birds and that. And we used to go out there, but I was the only one with a lab.
Yeah.
You know, we used the labs for the ducks all the time, but I had one lab. It was just a phenomenal. She's my oldest one.
Yeah.
And she was a phenomenal, pheasant dog. And, I mean, those guys that, you know, I'd go with, you know, like Al, Mike and Joe and, Dan and that, we just had a blast, but they all had their pointers and I was out there with my black lab and they would all, I would just get razzed like, hey, Wayne, I think I see a wood duck over there. I'm like, all right, guys. Yeah. Just keep it up. But I am looking forward to getting out with Ron and doing some, you know, some pheasant hunting out here.
You know, that's the thing is kind of making a comeback.
Yes,
I think, you know, it kind of went down there, you know, the 1990s.
Yes.
But here over the last 10 years or so, I actually have a good friend that has a kennel at Mammoth Spring, trained duck hunting dogs, 60-day kennels.
Yeah.
And the duck hunting has just exploded over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think the upland birds have as well.
Yeah, yeah. Stuttgart down in there, boy.
Oh, yeah.
There's some good duck hunting.
Yeah, really duck capital of the world, Stuttgart, yep, Arkansas.
Yep, yep.
Capital of a lot of other stuff, too, but it's duck hunting capital of the world, too. But, so, Ron, I know coming up in a bonus segment, we're gonna talk about some of the ways that you seal the deal. And folks, we have Ron on because he killed a
37.
I just can't even remember it at such a height. A 37-pound turkey during this turkey hunt in Missouri.
Yes.
He wasn't in Kansas. He wasn't in Iowa where they eat all that corn. He was in Missouri.
Right. And he wasn't at Apple's grocery store in the freezer section.
No, I mean, this is... No, he wasn't down at Harp's picking up a frozen
and
one.
I hear, I thought I was so proud of having that 27-pounder I killed in Ohio. Mm-hmm. On my birthday, had to be 5 years ago now, and I thought, man, you know, 27-pound, that's just 37. It makes mine just look like an adolescent thing.
Yeah, my biggest one's 25 and a half. And now a bird that big, you don't eat him all at one time.
No, I tell you what we done, though, we did, I took half of the breast. Mm-hmm. And sliced it in about half-inch slices and put it in a crock pot with some stew and some chicken broth and so on. And, oh, my goodness, it'd make a puffy pull a freight train to get to it. I mean, it is good stuff.
That sounds like good stuff. Wow.
I'm just trying to picture the size of those turkey breasts must have been on a 37-pound. I mean, you cut those are like medallions on a steak.
Yeah. You know? I'm thinking, you know, because I took a half of one of the turkeys I killed and put in my smoker and smoked it. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I got a smoker big enough for a 37-pound turkey breast. Golly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a bird. That's a wild bird, being that the legs are still big enough to go ahead and cook those too.
Oh yeah, yeah, we did. We done that, and also the thighs. You know, of course, the thighs. There's a lot of good brown meat on the thighs, mm-hmm, and right, so on. So yep. We just pretty much going to do the whole thing. Use the whole thing. The feathers, the tail feathers, were just as brown as they could be, and that chocolate brown and everything, you know, because that's one of the things on that size turkey. You wonder if there's not some sort of domestic turkey that's got involved there or something,
right.
But there was not a bit of sign towards that whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And with a 12-inch beard, I wonder if it would have been a 14 if it wasn't dragging on the ground all the time.
It might have been. And we want to hear about that hunt, but folks, we're going to make you listen to the bonus segment on the podcast to find out about that hunt in particular. But I got to ask here before we get to that, when you saw that bird first time, mm-hmm, and first off, did you know he was in the woods before you went to hunt him?
No, I did not.
When you saw him the first time, did you go, oh my God, yeah, it's a giant?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he was about, he was probably close to 200 yards away when I seen him.
And looks like he was 6 feet.
Yeah. Well, I'd had some other birds that had come out earlier about the same place, and they were, I could tell this one was considerable bigger.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I would think that much bigger than your average turkey. He could have been alone, and you still would have known, yeah, that's a big,
exactly,
turkey.
Exactly.
That's a big turkey. Yeah. All right, Wayne, tell folks about how they can hear the rest of the story about the harvest of a 37-pound turkey in Missouri.
Yeah, just because the radio show ends doesn't mean that the show is ending. So to listen to more of Ron's story, you're just going to go to your favorite podcast carrier. Again, I'm not going to name them all because we're on all of them. So just pick your favorite one out. Make sure you follow us, leave a review. And speaking of reviews, we have Larry from Ohio won the casted car from Ward.
Oh, from last week. Ward Burton.
From Ward Burton, yep.
Oh, it's going to be autographed and everything. That's cool.
Larry, we're going to get that car right out to you here as soon as we get a hold of Ward, and we'll get that sent out to you. But, folks, to win these prizes, you got to just leave a review on the podcast, Apple Podcast, and it's not Stitcher. I can't think of the other one. Podchaser. Podchaser is the other one that is real easy to leave a review on. Those are the ones that get sent right to us, and you can get your name drawn. Make sure you leave your full name and the state that you're from so we can locate you and get you as a winner. Again, everybody, you've been listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friends. And like we say here at American Roots, when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind. See you next week, everybody.
So you never got to worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station.
Eagle Seed presents American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends. This is Wayne Locke. I got Mike Grace in the studio here with me. And Ron, you're still sitting here. And
yes,
you're excited, and we're excited to hear a story here. But folks, if you're listening to this, that means you are on our podcast. We appreciate you listening to us on the podcast. Make sure you follow us and leave a review with your name and your state in the review so we can get a hold of you. Again, Larry from Ohio just won the car from Ward Burton. It's a... How did he describe it?
Diecast model
of his car, and he's going to get that sent to him. We'll get a hold of Ward and get Larry's information over to him and have him sent right out. But
Larry, if you're listening and you want me to hold that for you, we'll just send it over to my house.
Well, you take it for 2 weeks. I'll take it for 2 weeks, right? Eventually, Larry, you will get it. But
Well, we got Ron here. Ron was on the radio portion of the program, and we've talked about him killing a 37-pound turkey in Missouri. And we kind of got into a little bit of it there right at the end of the radio show. But I'd like to get down to the nuts and bolts of this hunt, Ron. Mm-hmm. What day of the week, how far into the season was it when you decided we're going to kill this big bird?
Yeah. Well, I had hunted earlier in the week. And then if you remember, we had a lot of wind and a lot of rain.
Yeah, a lot of rain.
And so it was basically Friday before I got to go back out, which was a week ago. Was last Friday, I guess it would have been. And I heard some birds, seen a couple of gobblers come out into the field, but they worked down through by where I had a blind set up, and they worked by. I don't know if they ever seen my decoy or not, because basically they were kind of under the hill, but they just never did come in range to where I could do anything. They'd stop every time I'd call and all, but then they just kept moving on. So I'd kind of watch them. Well, the next day was Saturday, which was a beautiful day. And I went out and got out there about 6:30 and set a couple of decoys out and got in my blind and started calling. And I'd heard a gobbler in a distance. But didn't really ever come in closer for me. And so, I just kept calling every probably 10 minutes, maybe a little, something like that. I would make a couple of calls and then make a cluck call and then yelp and really didn't hear much of anything else. And, it got to be about 9 o'clock. And I had stretched my legs out and was sitting there. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and about 200 yards up in this open field, there was this gobbler. And I could tell he was a larger gobbler. And so I didn't go back to the box call. I went to my little slate call that I've got. And I just made a few small calls, because they can hear so much better than we can. And so I just made a couple of small calls, and he raised his old neck up about 3 foot in the air, seemed like.
Well, when they weigh 37 pounds, they got 3 feet of neck.
But anyway, and then he went into a strut right there. And I thought, boy, that's kind of unusual. And anyway, then he started kind of working towards me just a little bit, but was really taking his time. And I got my gun up out the window of my blind, and I got into position to where I wouldn't have to move an inch for him, because I always try to do that way out, because I've had times whenever just the least little move, and boy, they'll pick up on that. I caught a movement out of the corner of my eye, and I thought, what is that? And so I slowly just barely turned my head enough to roll my eyes, and it was a live hen. And she'd come in there right around my decoys.
Wow.
And was just pecking at the ground and pecking at grass. And she'd stretch her wings out, you know, and just act like she was just having a wonderful time there. Well, he seen her too. And I think that was a deal that sold the deal. He come on. He got down within about, probably 75 yards or so, and went back into a full strut. And he stayed in that strut all the way through to and I kept waiting for him to come out of that strut, but he come through, and there was a roll of pine trees that was kind of in between me and him at that point, and I knew he needed to come on this side of those pine trees for me to shoot, and my arms were aching. my legs were aching.
How much time had gone by at this point?
Oh, probably an hour, I guess. Probably close to it.
No wonder you were aching.
From the first time you saw him?
Yes.
He took his good old time.
It took forever to come.
During that hour, did you ever lose sight of him?
No. Never lost sight of him. Never did. That was one thing that was marvelous. Because I have hunted them where you did lose sight of them, and then all of a sudden there they were, But no, I kept him in sight all the time. Well, finally he come through those pines, still in a strut, never went out of that strut. And he come within about probably 45 yards. And that hen was still just right around there, and she was within about 15 or 20 yards of me. And I thought, she's going to catch a glimpse of me, and she's going to go, boop! And when she's gone, he's gone.
Yeah.
And so I thought, oh boy, and so I thought, okay. And I normally wouldn't shoot one in a strut because it's hard to really pick that head out of that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I shot and knocked him down. And the funny thing about it was when I shot and knocked him down, I looked over and that hen was still just like, I don't know what happened. And she wasn't alarmed at all. She was just kind of still standing around there, kind of looking. And of course, he was flopping. Well, the next thing I knew, his flopping turned into a little bit of a run. But then, so I thought, okay. And so I pulled in and I shot, and that's when I just completely killed him.
Wow.
But I know the Lord was in that other hen.
Must have been.
Now, I got a question, two questions for you, actually. One, when he was on top of the hill, you said he fanned out when you called to him. Now, being 37 pounds, when he fanned out, did he block the sun? And secondly, when he gobbled, did it sound like a T-Rex, that roar of a T-Rex coming?
It was like that stealth when it takes off, when that stealth bomber takes off.
Well, it's an amazing story, and it's an amazing bird. Now, I'm going to assume that you're going to have that tail fan mounted.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It will be, do you have a wall big enough for it to fit on? This thing can be big as a house.
He needs like a cathedral ceiling like they use for elk,
I tell you what, whenever I did get him home, and I got the scales out, and I put him on the scales, and my son happened to be there, and he said, Dad, that's not even believable. And I said, I know it. I said, look at it again. But it was. I mean, we knew it was a big bird, but 37 pounds. I mean, like I said, I'd killed one earlier, 21 pounds. And,
you're happy with that.
Yeah, very happy. And I thought it was a great bird. This thing here, of course, this sounds terrible, but I didn't carry him to the truck. I drug him to the truck like he would a deer.
I can see him with his deer drag.
I'm not dragging that bird out. I'm going to get truck driving in, picking him up.
He has to get rotator cuff surgery again if he did. Hey, I got a question about your setup though for your decoys. What were you using as a set? Did you have a tom decoy? Was it just two hens, a bedded, a mating hen? What did you have set up?
Earlier in the week, I'd had a tom and I'd had two hens. But this tom that I had, when the wind blew it, it'd spin.
Mm-hmm.
and I had some hens that come in, and that scared them. That scared them away. Yeah. And so I'd done away with him. So I just had the two hens set up. And there are those the featherweight type hens, just foam type hens. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, I'll say a trick on that is if you have a windy day, you put two stakes in, one to hold your bird up, and you put the other one at the front. So where that opening is, it can only go back and forth 4 inches, back and forth. Yeah. It'll wiggle on you, but it'll never spin around.
Yeah,
so
very good.
Little tip
good.
For everybody on that.
No, that's good. You bet.
So you had that just the hens out then for the when he came in that day.
Yep.
Well, it's an amazing story. Congratulations, Ron. 37 pounds. Have you looked into what the state record is?
No, but I know I have not. I have not.
Okay. I'm looking it up right.
I don't have that much time. If you can get it done real quick, Wayne, but golly, it's got to be close. I mean, I've never heard of that.
No. I talked to a conservation agent, and he looked at course, and he'd been 22 years. I think we covered that earlier.
Yeah.
And he said he'd never seen anything like that.
I got good news on this. The current state record for Missouri is 26.1 pounds with spurs 1.5 inches.
And you had an inch and three quarter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And wow. And an 11.5-inch beard.
So 12-inch beard. So
proud. Wow.
Yeah.
He broke all
and
three.
If you scored that turkey, because you take the length of the spurs times two, the weight, and then, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Well, I tell you what, I just, and you know, if there's any key that I would say is patience. You know,
an just, hour,
yeah.
An hour watching
well,
this bird.
And you know, and I'm sure you have, but I have set, you know, pretty good for quite a while and then get up and scare one off. You
sure,
know,
yeah.
You know, just if a guy will make up his mind to just sit there, no matter if you hear anything or not, but just sit there and continually call ever so often. I think that's the key.
Yeah, patience, patience. And like last week, our guest last week, Lizzie Long, hunted the same bird for 12 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And finally killed the bird.
Right. Now, the world record for an Eastern is 37.6 pounds shot in Kentucky on April 21st
wow.
of 2016.
Okay. Wow.
Or no, 2002, I'm sorry. And I was wrong on that weight, the 26.1. It was 33 pounds is the Missouri state record.
Wow.
26.1 is the largest taken since that 33-pound was killed in 1990.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
So it looks like you may have it.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know now if you can get it confirmed, though, because you've already eaten it.
Well, I know
It just has to be weighed by the
By
the state officer, though, right? And
yeah.
He had one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did he weigh the bird?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, you
there
might.
There you go.
There you go. There you go. I'd check that out, Ron. Wow. Folks, hope you've enjoyed the American Roots Outdoors Radio today, both the radio show and, of course, the podcast where you are now. Don't forget to
leave a review.
A review. That's
right.
What I was looking for. Leave a review. Make sure it's a good one, and you might win some great prizes.
Right. And if you go to our website, you're looking for some turkey calls or some apparel, just go to our website at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. Make sure when you check out, you leave the keyword podcast in the checkout, and you'll receive a discount on all your purchases. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Like we say here at American Roots Outdoors, when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.